seem to have any trouble telling Hagar where she should go.
Is it okay to be disappointed in the heroes of our faith?
Is it okay to be disappointed with God?
This seems like the last kind of story we need today. We don't need another reason to wonder where in the world God is.
Have you ever felt hopeless?
What if there's no such thing as home?
What if I feel alone forever?
We live in a world where we are so estranged from each other that we can treat community as optional and we can see one another as expendable.
There are Hagars all around us, but we don't know them by name. We give them names we're more comfortable with, names we can pronounce.
Every day we send Hagars out with no food, with no water, with their children in tow.
They're told that their bodies don't matter, that they pose a threat just by being who they are.
We live in a time where the Hagars of this world are throwaway people.
And maybe even you and I, maybe even we, know what it feels like to be afraid that we don't really matter, or that we are beyond the bounds of God's grace.
Sometimes it feels like God is so far away from this world.
In times like these, we need a witness. We need someone to help us.
We need someone to remind us to not lose hope,
to not lose faith,
to not feel unloved. We need to let the Hagars of the world tell us their story. We need to let her story take the center.
Her name is Hagar, and her story is radical love. As a tear ran down her face, she felt her cheeks warm. She thought she should be used to it by now. After all, this was her world, or the only one she had ever known. She spent her entire childhood watching Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, sell her friends away into slavery. She knew her time would come. Soon, too, she was a little girl with dark skin, whose name never really seemed to matter. Raised in a world where her voice was a burden, her wishes were irrelevant, and her life was insignificant, this little girl knew that if she wanted to make a name for herself one day, she was going to have to love herself enough to fight for it. If she wanted to be a part of God's great, amazing story, she would have to write her chapter herself. Every action, every word, every facial expression would matter. In a world where even her body was not her own, this little girl deemed herself worth the fight because her God loved her by name. No one else had ever done that before. With God, she was seen, really seen, for who she was. With God, she was not expendable. She was beloved. As she grew older, the fire inside of her began to burn even brighter than the fire that always seemed to be around her. She started to feel like she had a name. So instead of giving in to the many delineations of her oppressive world or giving up altogether, this little girl was brave. When everything around her was encouraging her to close the book, she instead chose to turn the page. And then one day, she was given away to another name, Sarah.
Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true. With thanksgiving, I'll be a living sanctuary for you.
It's not so much trust that I navigate in this household, it's risk. There is no trust when you're handmaiden to a woman like Sarah. There is waiting. There is watching, responding, reading her expressions, her posture. And I've watched her face grow more disdainful of my Ishmael as he delights in his younger brother, Isaac. Isaac loves to play with his big brother. My Ishmael's shoulders have grown broad and strong enough to carry Isaac on adventures that are always under Sarah's surveillance, always with her scrutiny. Isaac loves to play with my son. They share a father. They share a gate. They share a way of moving around in the world, a way of exploring the world. But I know my son must be more cautious, more calculated. He must learn to watch the signs of lines crossed and of displeasure, or worse yet, even of hatred. I have washed Sarah's hair, her clothes, the crevices of her body. I attended her in childbirth. I wiped her brow as the labor pains gripped her body, a body well past childbearing days. And I comforted Isaac those first few days. Sarah was exhausted by this mantle of motherhood that she never expected. I have done my duty to care for Sarah, but I do not trust her. I do what I have to do. I say what I have to say. And I know she watches me, and she sees me, and she sees Abraham's pride in his son, his oldest son, my Ishmael. Now there's talk of God's favor, of who the true son is, who will be the carrier of God's promises for a family, for a nation. They speak of God like a benefactor, like a man who chooses favorites and then forgets everyone else. That's the world the patriarchs taught us to see. But you can't see the God that I've seen in my life and believe that God is just about feeding the power of the fathers. I have felt a holy tenderness. I have felt the fidelity of our God, abiding with me, teaching me to see tiny openings of joy that can come through in a moment, even if fleeting. God has taught me how to find life in this place. God teaches me how to believe in how I am made, fearfully and wonderfully made. God abides with me in the anguish of my position in this household. God whispers to me about freedom, about the promise of a different world for my Ishmael. God teaches me the sensations of gentleness, the survival. God teaches me of imagination in this cruel world. God teaches me how to believe. God teaches me how to sing. Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving. I'll be a living sanctuary for you.
There is no roadmap in the wilderness, no bright signs marking the way forward, no hand leading you through the unknown. When the sun goes down, you can get lost. Your faith can sink deep into the dirt. The warmth of the daylight can swiftly slip away. The sounds of unknown creatures can echo all around. The wilderness is not a friend. It is lonely and unsettling. It is bitter and unbearable. It is dry and thirsty. The wilderness threatens and attacks. It strangles and blinds. It makes you forget, provokes you to lose your footing, to lose your way, to lose your grasp on hope, to even lose your sense of God. Hagar and Ishmael are a long way from home. Not their home, of course. Not any sort of a home that they can claim as their own. But the place where they had dwelled for so long. The place that had given them a roof to ward off the rain, food to keep their bellies still, and some semblance of security that they would live to see another day. There is no justice in the wilderness, and no water to quench the palates of a dying mother and son. The tears of Ishmael break her heart. Has God abandoned them both? Is there no hope in sight? And yet Hagar has tasted wilderness before. She knows about survival. For her, hope in a God who delivers is not simply a fleeting or comforting thought. It is the only way to go on. The Bible tells us that she sits opposite her boy, looking him in the eyes as he cries out in thirst. The Quran tells us that she cannot sit still, but runs between two hills 7 times in desperate search for renewing water. And then a mother lifts up her voice, crying out to her God, our God, refusing to die. Do not be afraid, says the Lord. Hagar's eyes are opened, and there is fresh, running water. Water to quench palates, water to save lives, water to promise more than tomorrow, but tomorrow into tomorrow. This is the water of a great nation of Hagar's descendants, a fruitful Arab nation, a faithful Muslim community. The promise that even in the depths of the wilderness, God will always be there. Hagar tells us so.
Lord, prepare me to be a sanctuary, pure and holy, tried and true, with thanksgiving. I'll be a living sanctuary for you.
Love.
Faith.
Hope.
You won't feel like this forever.
You will have a home in God.
You will find a path.
There are times when we are troubled by our faith, troubled by our community, even troubled by our God. But our faith teaches that even in the most bewildering wilderness, God refuses to let go. God insists on calling us to more.
God's love for Hagar is strong. Through her faith, she recognizes her own self-worth, enough to keep fighting, enough to live fully.
Faith does not mean that our lives will bear the marks of the world's favor. Even God's blessing is not the same as favor or as wealth or power. Faith is making life from where you are and having the eyes to see God's fingerprints there.
Our faith in God overcomes hopelessness. God's devotion to us can overpower wilderness. God sees us, finds us, understands, reaches out, reaches in.
Sometimes we just need to survive. We just need to be reminded that someone knows us by name.
And sometimes liberation is stirring underneath the surface, yearning for us to grab hold of it.
And sometimes vitality can gush into our lives, even from a rock in the wilderness.
her story, Hagar's story, amplifies the nature of God's power. It is responsive, it is intricate, it is faithful. It is not about dominance or control.
God is not the great puppeteer in the sky choreographing our lives. Providence is a golden thread that stitches our lifetimes together with a tenderness that knows us enough to provide us with what we truly need and more than we could ever imagine.
Our work is to remain open, like Hagar.
Open to the beautiful threads of God's healing, refreshing power that gives each of us and all of us together a story. And we don't just have a story, we have a responsibility.
Because if we listen to Hagar, then we know that God is stirring in our midst, even now, creating sanctuary where God's love can grow.